From the Maine State Library in Augusta, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Summertime is a great time to grab a book and catch up on some reading. And for 2 years now, the Maine Humanities Council and Maine State Library have encouraged Mainers to all get on the same page by reading the same book or books. The program is called Read Me. And today we're going to hear from the three Maine authors featured this year. Joining me, C.B. Anderson. She is a sixth-generation native of Maine, and her recently published collection, River Talk, is one of the books we will be talking about today. Susan Hand Shetterly's Settled in the Wild is the other book we'll be discussing. Susan's the author of 9 books and was a contributing writer for Maine Times for many years. Her new book, Seaweed Chronicles, was released earlier this month. Also with us, Paul Dworin. He's the author of the Mike Bowditch series of crime novels. Did I say that right? Is it Bowditch or Bowditch?
I say Bowditch.
You say Bowditch, okay. Yes. The Mike Bowditch series of crime novels and editor emeritus of Down East. He chose today's book selections. Welcome to everyone here in the audience. As always, we want to hear from you, both you in the audience and those of you listening on your radio. Have you read River Talk or Settled in the Wild or other writing by these authors? If so, we would love to hear from you. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. But before I get to our guests here at the table with me, I want to turn to Nicole Rancourt, who is Program Officer at the Maine Humanities Council. And she's going to talk a little about the whole program, Read Me. What is the goal of Read Me, Nicole?
Well, we have 3 goals with this program, actually, Jennifer. So the first is to kind of connect Maine's adult readers through a shared reading experience, which can be hard because we're a big state. So we try to go through that with libraries because they are everywhere. The next thing we want to do is support libraries in their work to create really wonderful quality summer reading programs for all ages. And the third is to really kind of elevate Maine authors that folks might not know about as much as the Pauls of our world.
When do we find out about next year's book?
So we're hoping to have all of that information in flashy gold letters sometime this fall. We're still working out those final pieces, but keep your ears peeled because we will be announcing it with gusto.
So I know that last year was the first year for the Read Me program. This is the second year. What kind of response have you gotten this year?
It has been so wonderful. So we have around the state 80 participating libraries. So 80 communities in Maine, and all of their constituents are able to access these books for free. We have programs going all over the place. This is a 17% growth, 20% growth over last year. The books are circulating constantly. We flooded the system with extra novels to help support all of the book groups. Some are in the audience today, and they're just flying around the state. It's been really, really wonderful and exciting.
Well, congratulations, and thank you for all of this. That was Nicole Rancourt, who's program officer at Maine Humanities Council. Paul, you were put on the spot to choose 2 books for the Read Me program this year, but why don't I just ask you first, how did that happen? Did you get an email or phone call? And when you did, what was your response?
Well, I was kind of a sitting duck, I have to admit, because I'm on the board of the Maine Humanities Council. And I got this very nice letter from Nicole asking me if I would consider choosing the books this year. And despite being, you know, very familiar with Read Me, I didn't fully appreciate what a big job it was going to be, what a responsible job it was going to be. But I immediately said yes, because I love libraries and I love any kind of opportunity that people take to get together and talk about reading. Then what I did was I took the approach that I always take when I have a very important decision to make, which is I immediately ask my wife what I should do.
Good man.
So my wife, Kristen Lindquist, who's a poet, suggested a couple of books. And they were the absolutely right books in my mind. It was in parallel, actually, with what I had already been inclined to do, which was the suggestion is to take, the goal is to choose one nonfiction book and one book of fiction. And in both cases, I thought, you know, I could probably choose a 1,000-page novel and, you know, some equally daunting tome about, you know, I don't know, Maine in the Civil War or something. But I know how attention is limited in our culture today. And I said, you know, two short books that are made up of short stories in one case and essays in the other are easy for people to get into and out of. And so I wanted to make any impediment towards getting involved in this program to be as low as possible, I guess was one of my criteria. And most importantly, I knew both of these books very well and I loved them very much.
All right. Well, Susan, what has this experience been like for you? Not only was one of your books selected, but also you've been going and speaking at libraries and meeting with these book groups, correct?
I have, yes. And thank you, Paul. I mean, it's a great honor to have my book chosen. I went to the library at Southwest Harbor, to the Ellsworth Public Library, and to the Edith Dyer Community Library. And it's so nice because it's not a talk I'm giving, standing above people talking down, but we all kind of made a circle and we all started talking and sharing with each other. And it was very informal and it was fun. And I love small libraries. When I first came to Maine, I knew big university libraries. Mm. But what I love are the little towns, and you go in and you find the library, you know. And they're very vital.
What about you, Cindy? What was the experience like for you? You did readings as well and book groups, book clubs.
Yes, so I've been also traveling around the state. River Talk has been out for a while, so this was, for me, a wonderful chance to connect again with readers, and especially with Maine readers who know the places I'm writing about, know the people I'm trying to convey. And so I always have the sense when I'm doing a book event in Maine that I'm going to be told whether the stories feel authentic or not. And I'm sure both of you can talk to that about how we try to be true to the people who know the material best. And I think more broadly, like Susan, it was wonderful to be visiting libraries and seeing how people love them, love the written word, and also how at a time when things are so divisive, books are such a commonality. I mean, it's the shared experience of not just sharing River Talk, but knowing that all of these people, all of us love books and love the written word. It's a big unifier.
I always wonder when you meet your readers and you meet people who come and ask you questions about your book, do you ever have someone almost teach you something about what you wrote, come to you and say, I got this theme, or I learned this from what you wrote. Do you ever think, well, gee, that wasn't what I was thinking about, but yeah, I guess you're right.
Yeah. that happens all the time.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I came to writing from a math background, so I'm not an English major. I'm not a deconstructionist. I often have a hard time when I finish a story even really being able to say what it's about or what the themes are. So I do hear that. You know, people bring their own lens, right? Their own accumulation of experiences to whatever they read. So I always learn something. And I often learn a lot about, you know, as Susan said, we'll sit in a circle if we can. And I learn a lot from people who, what their reading loves are and kind of who they are as people too. So that was a wonderful part of the summer for me, and it's still going on. So.
Susan?
Well, mine is slightly different because, and I think it's because it's nonfiction. And I have to just pause and say, I've never liked the word nonfiction. I mean, why write something that starts out as a non? And it's always what it isn't. But I don't know what to call it.
Truth?
But I think fiction tells the truth, too.
Oh, yeah.
So the thing about these groups in this summer that has touched me so much is to find out that, well, when I'm writing, I have an idealized idea of a reader. And I try to say what the experience is as clearly as I can, as if I were looking through a piece of very thin ice or something like that and conveying the experience. Because I trust that the people who are reading it actually feel the same way I do. And I'm just saying something that they probably have felt, but maybe not said the same way to themselves. And so when I go and do these readings, I'm amazed at what comes back, this intensity of love of birds or the land or whatever it is that I've written about, that these people come back with a force of affection and caring that is very moving to me.
Mm. Paul?
Well, one of the reasons I chose Settled in the Wild was that it is a hard book to pin down. I mean, it's a collection of essays that really grapple with the idea that everybody in Maine lives on the edge of some kind of wild, you know, whether it's the pond in your backyard, and there's this 1 week every year that the spring peepers just suddenly start up. You know, that's a very common experience, I think, that we all share in Maine. It's one of the reasons why a lot of us live here. And yet at the same time, it's this deft portrayal of Susan's life as back to the lander, I guess you'd say. And, you know, it's there subtly. It's not there in, you know, moments of great drama or whatever. But that's such a quintessential Maine experience. And I really loved how the book managed to weave these two strands in together. And as somebody, too, who sort of considers himself a naturalist, I read it and learned a load of great information that I intend to steal from you right and left for my future novels. So.
I think I overheard you telling Cindy you're going to steal something, too.
Yes, I'm a thief. unapologetically so.
Well, why don't we hear a little bit of each of these books? Cindy, how about we start with you? Would you like to read a small passage from River Talk for us?
Sure. Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer. So this is a story, a short called Pipe. It's about a page. She was the only woman on the pipe fitting crew, the smallest and lightest, the one they hoisted high into the steel bones of the building. She swung from girders like a trapezist, sat astride pipes as if they were elephants. When she pulled the trigger of her grinder, it vibrated against her belly like a purring cat. She loved the names of the tools she used, come-alongs and jersey pulls and chain fells. Each of her joints was perfect, as bright as new silver and smooth to the touch. The welders who soldered her pipes whistled and shook their heads. She did nice work. One July noon, she carried her lunch outside. The crew was sprawled in the scant shade of the canteen truck. They watched her come, a small woman with dark braids, and made room in their circle. She bit into her tuna on rye, drank Coke, listened to the men talk. When she opened a roll of mints, the men wiped dust from their fingers to each take two. On the way in, one of them blocked the door, touched her through her work shirt with his rough fingers. "You're hot," he said, his eyes like stones in his sweating face. She looked at him and swung her empty lunch bucket in a small arc. "I have work to do," she said. The bucket cracked him in the shin. His face tightened, but he moved aside, allowed her to pass. Inside, she stepped into her harness. Her legs were trembling. When the crew hoisted her to the ceiling and she was again alone, the rich smell of hot steel began to steady her. The grinder came alive in her hands, and she pressed it to the pipe. The familiar buzz moved up her spine and into the base of her brain, and the floor below receded. Later, she hung upside down to bevel an edge. Her braids dangled, and the file in her hand flashed. Bolts fell from her pocket, dropping like hail onto the hard hats of the crew below. They laughed, picked up the bolts, and said she was good luck, which she figured she was.
Oh, that's wonderful. Wow.
That was really good.
Okay, we'll take a breath, and we'll ask Susan to read a passage.
Mine is called Going Back to the Land, and I'm just going to read the first little section of it. The idea that we were going, maybe I should say first. My then husband and I and our son moved to a cabin in the woods without electricity or running water or a bathroom. And we lived there for 10 years. Okay. The idea that we were going back to the land made me laugh. It was the word back. With our son, who was less than a year old, my husband and I moved into an unfinished cabin on a 60-acre woodlot in Downeast, Maine, with no electricity, no plumbing, no phone. It was June 1971. We had both grown up in suburbs. This was all new. And I laughed with relief when we survived the first year. I'm old enough now to sympathize with my parents-in-law when they arrived for a visit in the fall of that year, just on the lip of serious snow. We were filled with all we had half learned in our hard-working, brand-new lives, and we couldn't wait to share it. They entered our little cabin in the evening, an interior illuminated by lamps that held their kerosene brightness close and threw shadows across the room. My mother-in-law slipped off her mink coat and draped it over a chair. When we sat down to a dinner of mashed rutabaga and soy burgers, brown rice and parsnips, my father-in-law, who had brought his own bottle of gin and was refilling his glass as if it contained oxygen, and he had been blasted against his will to the moon, looked up at me through a startled haze as I set a warm loaf of whole wheat bread on the table. "Everything's beige," he growled.
I love that, refilling his
glass.
True.
Before I could begin to explain why I thought beige was good for him, a skunk living beneath the floorboards of the kitchen released an explosion of spray, and the mink coat got a dose of its old life back.
Oh,
totally true.
Oh, thank you both for sharing. We have to take our first break. When we come back, your comments and questions for the authors here with us today. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Read Me, a statewide initiative to get everybody reading the same books. We are live from the Maine State Library with an audience. Joining me, three authors. Paul Dworin is the author of the Mike Bowditch series of crime novels. C.B. Anderson is the author of River Talk. And Susan Hand Shetterly, the author of Settled in the Wild. Those were the two books chosen for this year's Read Me program. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. You may send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. If you're here in the audience with us, please come to the microphone. Paul Dworin, author to author, what would you like to say about those passages that were read or questions you'd like to ask?
First of all, I would say that they both summed up the reasons why I chose the books. excuse me. in the case of, you know, Susan's, there's that wonderful humor, but that closeness to the living, you know, with skunks and outhouses and experiences that I've had personally, and really responded to that. And with Cindy's, what's so wonderful about her book is they're a collection of short stories devoted to a broad range of characters. And I feel like, you know, she read a page about this woman who's, you know, who's a pipe fitter, and she, you get it. You get her love of her job, but the impediments that she faces. And each of the stories has, you know, as its subject, some recognizable manner. I kept turning the pages and saying, I think I know that person, or I know somebody like that. Or she actually introduced me to some communities. There's a story in there about a cult, a main cult, and which is one of my favorites in the book. And I really responded to that. I think that, you know, good main writing has that truthfulness, that sense of authenticity, and that's why I chose these books. So the question I have for you, Cindy, is, my books sort of proceed from murder to murder. Mm-hmm. There's always somebody getting stabbed or shot or straggled, and yet your stories have this sort of, the drama in them is very quiet. Mm-hmm. It doesn't always, the stories don't necessarily end with gunplay. They never end with gunplay, and yet they're very satisfying, and you have a feeling when you complete one that, you know, there's something happens in your heart that it's a recognition. And I wondered how conscious you are of sort of working in that mode. Is it something you set out to do?
Well, I think it's true that I start with a person, a character. So for years, before I started writing fiction, I was writing nonfiction. And traveling around Maine, I was doing a lot of work for Yankee and Down East, and meeting people who, after I finished writing about them, lingered in my mind. I wanted to write more, and what's more, I wanted to make things up about them. And so I hate to say, I'm not someone who, you know, I don't have a muse on my shoulder, and I don't channel my characters, unfortunately. But generally, there is someone in, you know, I have someone in mind when I start to write. And what happens on the page is in many ways sort of up to them. So sometimes, I guess I proceed from character first, and then plot, to the extent that it does come, comes second. I mean, I have a quick anecdote about when I used to write stories. I was a single mom, and when I finished a story, I would ask my kids to sit down with me and listen. And I think my daughter Katie was probably 12, my son was 9. We sat, I read, and my daughter said all the right things. Oh, mommy, beautiful descriptions, and oh, I loved it. And I said, oh, thank you, Katie. Then I turned to Eric and I said, well, he says, well, mom, that's another story where not a whole lot happens. So from then on, I wrote with Eric on my shoulder, make something happen. So, yeah.
Well, and Susan, I wonder about your own process. I mean, the chapters in Settled in the Wild feel very discreet. They feel very organized. But when you sit down to write, do you know where you're going, what a piece of writing is going to be? I mean, when you you know, when you write about elvers, did you realize that this was ultimately going to be about the concept of having a sense of home and returning home?
I don't know when I start out what it's about, what I'm writing about. I usually start out with an image or a feeling inside me. For instance, the elvers, the things about, they're the little eels, I'm sure you all know. So I would start out with what it felt like to hold one, you know, personal. And then I'd start also with the idea that we're harvesting so many of them. And I wouldn't know where I was going to go with that, or if it would work, because I don't want to write an angry essay. I want to open up the idea of the lives of different kind of creatures and our coming in contact with them in a way that is not angry. Well, I do get angry sometimes, and I write angry, but not often. But often I start writing, and there's I realize there's nothing there, but I don't know it until I've worked on it for a while. But may I just say one thing to Paul? I love his books because he gets the birds right and the trees, and I learned so much from his books. Yeah.
Well, that's high praise. Thank
no,
you
that's
very much.
True.
It's and
true.
I think you've made him blush.
I did.
That's not too hard.
We have a question from the audience. What's your name? Where are you here from?
Tony from West Gardner.
Great. Go ahead.
I'm wondering about drop shipping. Like, there's a company in China, Dang Dang. Is it possible to just like send like maybe 10 books there or whatever? And there's, of course, there's no guarantee you getting money back from it, but is that possible?
What are we talking?
I don't know. I don't understand your question. You know,
like
are you an author?
Yeah.
And you're trying to get your books to China?
Yeah.
Have you all tried anything like that?
No. I have found that the best way to not have to deal with those sorts of problems is to have a multi-billion dollar publisher that handles drop shipping. So I'm totally ignorant as to the answer of your question. I apologize for that. But you know, I mean, one of the wonderful things about the age that we're living in is just that there's so many different opportunities to publish your work, whether it's online or in small presses or self-published. And I'm sure that there has to be answers out there in certain forums that you'll find if you can just sort of narrow down your search request.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. We have an email from Frederica. She says, so happy to have read these two books. Shetterly book was real, poetic, and inspirational. I'm on an island, so the words rang true. I love short story collections. The River Talk tales were moving, illuminating, and hopeful in spite of the grimness of some characters' lives. Tourmaline was a favorite of mine. So thank you, Frederica. Go ahead. What's your name and where are you from?
Hi, I'm Julie Olson. I'm the Adult Services Librarian at Lithgow here in Augusta. And I just wanted to say, first of all, thank you to MPBN for hosting this. Thank you to all of the authors. I love all of your work. And thank you to the Maine Humanities Council for organizing this. Our patrons just loved the picks this summer. We can't keep them on the shelves. We ordered 10 copies of each, and they're all checked out all the time. They're still all checked out, even though all of our library's events have wrapped up. So they're clearly a big hit, and I feel like the biggest measure of how much everyone loved them is at the end of our book discussion groups, we always ask, would you recommend these books to people? And often the answer is no, but with your books, both of them, every reader in the group said that they would recommend the book, that they would purchase copies for people they knew. It was really wonderful. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. Someone else here in the audience, what's your name and where
Hi.
Are you here from?
I'm Jane Whiteside. I'm from Augusta, Maine, and I was part of the reading group here, Read Me group at the Maine State Library. I'm also a University of Maine Augusta graduate from in the library sciences program and the associate's degree program. And I just had a question or a comment about each one of the books. Settled in the Wild, I was reading the book, and I noticed at the end you sort of have this is for Susan, you have an epilogue, and it talks about to grow up, this has to do with birds at the very end, page 240, to grow up they needed something from us, to raise them well, we needed something from them. So I looked at that and I thought, well, that has to do with reciprocity and nuance and emotion. And I feel that's, you know, something that should be summed up for people to have more of in, you know, providing health care and other things. And then I looked at another part, which I'm actually a little bit more interested in. This is for C.B. Anderson on the part, the very 1.5 page section called Everything. How does that relate to that term, the idiom, everything but the kitchen sink? I thought that was what, maybe, does that have something to do with it? Maybe you can describe that section, that part
story.
Of the book. That's page 181.
Thank you. Yes, well, thank you for your question. So that story is in the book, for those of you who haven't read it, is comprised of mostly longer stories interspersed with a few short shorts, and that is one of the short shorts. And I'm afraid I don't have a precise answer for why it's titled Everything. Though it's a story about loss, I suppose. Not one of the stories, perhaps, that ends on an uptick or a positive note. I wonder, well, you're away from the mic now, but perhaps we can talk afterwards about that specific story a little bit more. Yeah. My stories are not linked, so there is no common thread other than linked by the landscape of Maine, which I think serves as a character. And in that one, too. Yes.
Susan, thoughts on reciprocity?
Oh, well, when I read you the part about living in a cabin and without electricity for 10 years, and then I laughed, the truth of the matter is that I learned everything I know from living in that cabin for 10 years without electricity. Mm-hmm. And even though in the winter, you know, February, there were a few complaints coming out of my mouth. I loved it, you know, and it meant so much to me, and it really focused my life. And the other thing that did was I learned to work with a wild bird rehabilitator. And that just changed everything for me. I mean, I loved my kids. I loved raising my kids. I loved taking care of wild birds. Mm. So I got a chance to do that, and that's reciprocity, I think. Yeah.
We're going to take another quick break, but first, on a related note to today's program, you have probably heard that PBS is on a quest to find America's most beloved book. The Great American Read is a list of 100 diverse books, and we're encouraging everyone to vote for your favorite. You can vote in the national poll and a Maine poll, created to see which of the books on the list is Maine's favorite. All that detail on mainepublic.org. And in September, there will be a drawing, a special drawing to win all 100 of the books featured in the Great American Read. So mainepublic.org is the place for the details. When we come back, more of your comments and questions. You're listening to Maine Calling. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Read Me, What People All Over Maine Are Reading Together. My guest, Susan Hand Shetterly. She is the author of 9 books and was a contributing writer for Maine Times for many years. Her newest book, Seaweed Chronicles, A World at the Water's Edge. Paul Dworen is the author of the Mike Bowditch series of crime novels, including The Poacher's Son, and C.B. Anderson, Cindy Anderson, a 6th-generation native of Maine and author of River Talk. Paul chose River Talk and Susan Hand Shetterly's older book named Settled in the Wild. I was afraid I was going to get that wrong. For the Maine Reads program called Read Me. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call. Our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We also welcome those of you in the audience to come to the microphone and ask a question, because we know a lot of you have read both of the books and been part of the program. And I'd really love to hear what it was like to be a part of a group of people in your community coming together to read these books together. Right now we're going to go to Holly Williams, who is calling from Pittsfield. Hi, Holly. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi there. First, I'd like to thank Maine Humanities Council and Maine State Library for bringing this program to the state and especially to the small communities. We greatly appreciate it, and especially these little libraries here. It gave us something extra special for us to look forward to through the summer. So we actually coordinated with the Newport Cultural Center and the Heartland Library, and we all had our own book discussions, but then we all met at Newport and got to listen to Cindy talk to us about her book. And we had a great turnout, had nearly 30 people, and we've really enjoyed reading these two books all summer. Our group met just a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about both of them here and just here in Pittsfield. And we ended up having this big discussion of what's the difference between a story and an essay, and is there a difference? And we got like a heated discussion about it, but it's been wonderful reading them this summer.
Well, Holly, thank you so much. Are you going to take part next summer in Read Me?
Oh, definitely. And actually, it's really, it's brought these three communities together. Joanne from Newport and Nick from Heartland and I, we're excited to work together again, even if it's not on this program, but on something else for sure.
Okay. Well, Holly Williams, thanks so much for calling in today. So I know that Settled in the Wild is not your most recent book, Susan. In fact, I dropped into Print Bookstore yesterday to pick up Settled in the Wild, and they were raving about Seaweed Chronicles. Tell me about Seaweed Chronicles.
Well, it sounds pretty unlikely. And what I was planning to do was to write another book of essays. And I was reading off the essay ideas I had to my agent on the phone. And she was in New York. And she was very quiet. That's not a good sign, really. And I got to the idea of going out with a seaweed harvester I know as an essay and going out and cutting seaweed. And she said, Susan, just write a book about seaweed. And I thought, there's nothing to say about seaweed, really. Maybe I could stretch out an essay. But, you know, 5 years later, I've written a book about seaweed. And I tell you, I could sit down right now and write another book about seaweed because I haven't said it all. And I think it's really fascinating. But I sure didn't realize it had the depth that it does have.
Cindy, you have something coming out.
Yes.
What is it? Is it another collection of short stories or a novel or something else?
Right. So in my work, I go back and forth between nonfiction, journalism, and fiction. And there's this story in River Talk at the end called Two Falls, which tells the story of a Somali woman in a town a lot like Lewiston. And that was a story that had its origins in several magazine pieces I did set in Lewiston that talked about the transformation in Lewiston. And she was one of a character who lingered with me, morphed into a fictional character, and I wrote about her in Two Falls. And then I felt I still didn't quite feel finished with, you know, there's so much going on in Lewiston, so I decided to write a book that explores the lives of five new immigrants in Lewiston, and as background tells the story of what's happened there. So I've been working on that for about a year and a half, and it will be coming out in 2019.
And are you done writing? Is it in the editing process
it's in,
now?
Yes, my editor has it, and I'm holding my breath.
Well, it's always so interesting to me because it really is such a process. I mean, from you turning it into your first writing the book, but then turning it into your editor, and then you wait.
Yeah, it's a very, very lengthy process. And this one, because I teach at BU, Boston University, and I had to take a year off to write this book. I really needed to be in Lewiston for a lot of it. So this one I needed to try to get in advance. So in this case, there was a whole proposal process. You know, my agent sent out an 80-page proposal, which took months to write. That took a whole winter to write. And So yes, it's a really lengthy process, and it's not over yet.
But people don't realize when they pick up a book at the library or at the bookstore and read it. What are you working on, Paul?
I am working on the 10th book in my Mike Bowditch series, which is due on December 1st. So
where are you now? Are you feeling good? Are you in a mad panic?
Mad panic is probably an understatement. But the reality is that this is what I go through every year, and it seems to be the way I have to work. Every book in my series sort of takes Mike to a different place in Maine and moves him a little bit farther personally and professionally. I don't want to give away too many of the details of the new book, but some of my readers' favorite characters who have been off stage for a book or two will be returning, and one of them has four legs. So if that means anything to anybody.
Murmur in the room here.
Yeah, that's good. All right.
So how do you cook up your murders?
How do I cook them up?
How do you decide
this dungeon underneath my house.
I'm thinking to myself as a former news reporter, have there been more murders in Maine in real life or in your novels?
Well, you know, what's sad is that actually, I mean, Maine has a history of being a fairly safe state, but, you know, some of that is changing. I don't typically take murders from the headlines. I don't like to exploit real human tragedy that way. On the other hand, I don't treat murder as sort of fun and games. You know, I it's hard for me to say exactly where they come from. I mean, I think that's something, you know, when Cindy was talking about, like, where did this arise, you know, a lot of times I'll have that same question. It's just that it's occurring instead of a short story that's a character profile, it will occur in the context of a suspense novel.
What advice would each of you give to someone who's an aspiring writer? Monica Wood likes to use the expression AIC, and the second two words are in chair. In other words, sit there and work. Yeah. Is that your advice or what else?
I would add to that that you need to go out and get some A glue to keep you in the chair. So, you know, I mean, read, right? You
always
can't really write without reading, and then just doing it every day a little bit. And, you know, the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance is a wonderful resource in Maine for aspiring writers and new writers, whether you want to self-publish or try to find a publisher and an agent, or, you know, whether you want to write shorter things and send them out. MWPA is a fabulous place to start.
What about you, Susan? What do you advise people who would like to write?
Well, I guess my advice is walk a lot. Because, no, I mean, really, I think it's true, is if you, for instance, get up early in the morning and write, and I usually do, I'm still in my jammies and my hair's straight up, and I try to get something down. And then as you walk, you go for a nice long walk, you begin to play around, you get away from it enough, and you begin to play back some of the things you said, and they settle, and you save some, and you come back. It's like editing, but you're away from it, so you can take some time before you erase and then decide you erased the wrong thing. So I'm a great advocate of walking.
Yeah, I have something to add to that, too, which is it's always good to stop when it's going well rather than stopping when you're in a place where you don't know what's coming next. That was a piece of advice I got early in my career, and it's true. Yeah.
Paul, you didn't write you had a different career first, right? I'm trying to remember.
I actually was the director of Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance back in the 90s briefly, and then I got hired to work at Down East Magazine and eventually became the editor-in-chief there.
That's right.
For a number of years. During that time, though, I was writing I had begun to write my novels, you know, sort of in the mornings and on weekends. And, you know, I always say it was all the stuff that I felt like I could never put into Down East magazine that I knew about Maine. But the piece of advice that I always give is persevere. You know, lots of people will have an idea for a novel. Fewer will begin to write it. And then even fewer will get, you know, halfway through it. And the numbers keep going down and down and down until you actually have the people who have completed something. Now, it's probably horrible. I mean, the first drafts of everything are, you know, are typically pretty bad. But at least then you have something you can revise and edit and show people, and they can tell, they can read it, and hopefully there's a beginning and a middle and an end, and you know, you can move forward with a completed manuscript in a way that, you know, the publishing industry is not particularly interested in half-finished books, you know. And
you can imagine why.
Yeah, you know, it's not a real mystery. So yeah, keep going, you know, and it will be a test, and it will be a test of your seriousness about how much you really, really want it.
Mm-hmm. It struck me before this show began today, you were all speaking with each other as if the three of you have known each other for a long time. Mm-hmm. And whenever we have Maine authors on Maine Calling, I have that sense. Is there a, I know that there's a community of writers here. I know that there's a sense that this may be a little different than other places. Do you all feel that? Do you feel the support from one another?
Should I start?
Whoever wants to.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I feel it. And maybe it does have something to do with Maine being a small town as well as a state. Mm-hmm. But I also think is we all know what it's like to look at a blank page, and we all work very hard alone, really. Mm-hmm. And so there's that feeling that we know that part about each other before we even, you know some of the other details.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you feel as though you make each other better? Because we have such high caliber authors here.
Boy.
I'm not intending to stump anybody here.
I could think of an author or two who's probably made me worse.
Now, what do you mean by that?
We'll have to save that for another show, Jennifer. It's interesting because the writer's life is one of it's very solitary, and yet when you do get together with people, you find all kinds of commonalities and can make really deep friendships. I mean, I have known both Susan and Cindy for a very long time, and I really treasure those friendships. But, you know, like a lot of other creative pursuits, it can be prone to envy and competition and that sort of thing. And, you know, it's every once in a while I'll read a book by a Maine author and it will depress the heck out of me because I said, that is so good. I don't think I'm ever going to be able to really capture Maine that way.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah, I think the Maine writing community is unusually supportive. And I think that is partly a function of the fact that we do often write in isolation and more so than folks who are in urban areas mm-hmm. do. And I also find Maine readers to be smart and engaged and wonderful. And I love doing events in Maine because of that.
Yeah. Well, those are that's our last word. And thank you all three for being here. I will just say personally, I'm envious of all of you. So the voice you just heard, that was Cindy Anderson, by C.B. Anderson. Her book, River Talk, was chosen. Susan Hand Shetterly, Settled in the Wild. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.